Welcome to the Lacoolcast Volume 1, the first of our two Offset Festival specials.
Hey there, I'm Ciarán from Lacool Magazine. You're very welcome to this, the very first Lacool Dublin podcast. In this edition, we'll concentrate on the upcoming Offset Festival, where the world's top creative talents will be gathering in Dublin for a week-long celebration of creativity. We talk to the guys behind it. We also talk to illustrator, gentleman, and opium-addicted octogenarian Alan Clark as he prepares to show his new body of work.
The sort of graphic language of the circus and stuff like that is certainly is an inspiration.
We get the lowdown from the Irish in London as we interview stylist Celestine Cooney and photographer Linda Brownlee.
You can't work in the fashion industry and not be a grafter.
But first, as this podcast is based on a design festival, we talk to Adrian Shaughnessy, graphic designer, writer, and host of the Resonance FM show, Graphic Design on Radio. Adrian, can you just give us a brief outline of what you do?
Well, I'm a graphic designer, but these days I don't do as much graphic design as I used to. I used to have a studio called Intro, and I had that for 15 years. At the end of 15 years, I kind of felt burnt out, and I developed some other interests. I developed an interest in writing about design, and also something that's taken a while to kind of evolve, but an interest in using the skills that we all have as graphic designers to actually do other things. And there's a sense in which if you're a graphic designer, you're kind of a passive, there's a danger that you become a passive entity, that you sit and wait for clients to bring you projects, and or you chase them for projects. But I just felt that there was a way that we could use all these skills, these abilities to visualize and to have ideas, to start taking more control over our lives and not be dependent on clients. So for the past, I think it's about 6 years, maybe getting on for seven, I've done an absolute hodgepodge of things. I have about 10 different jobs, and I'm kind of part of the new sort of micro economy. I earn a little bit of money here, a little bit of money there, and I do everything from I have a radio show on Resonance through to I've recently started a publishing company. Okay, well, the first track I wanted to play was a track called Beginner's Falafel, and that's from Flying Lotus, and that's from an album called Los Angeles.
Can you maybe tell us more about Resonance FM? It's something I've only come across quite recently, and it's great shows that they do based on football and that the show they have dedicated to bicycles.
There is a little bit of a problem with Resonance because it is a well-kept secret, and it exists on a tiny budget. It's run by basically three people and lots of willing helpers. None of the presenters are paid, but I never have a problem with that because I would love to be paid for doing it, but what you get is you get complete freedom, and apart from screaming obscenities down the microphone, I can do what I want. So I'm able to have a very indulgent program that probably only appeals to other sad graphic designers like myself. The next track I wanted to play was a track by Sun Ra, the great Sun Ra. And this is a track called Earth Rock, and it's from an album called The Night of the Purple Moon, and it's on the Atavistic label. ¶¶
It's an interesting concept, the show graphic design on the radio. How do you find talking about a visual subject through a non-visual medium? How does that work?
What I basically do on the show is once a week for an hour, I have a guest in, usually a reasonably well-known graphic designer, and we talk about their work and play some music. And it's funny enough, graphic designers, there's a huge kind of link and connectivity between design and music, and most designers are music fans. A lot of them got into design through music. They were in love with album covers as youngsters or whatever. So the issue of kind of talking about graphic design on the radio actually isn't a problem. And also, you know, I make a point of making sure that we talk about the implications of graphic design. We don't sit and discuss, you know, how cool so-and-so's logo is. And we talk about what the implications are of being a designer and, you know, what our responsibilities, ethical, you know, cultural, etc. So, you know, only the listeners can decide. But for me, I don't think it's a problem. I certainly hope it's not a problem. And it's kind of why I called it graphic design on the radio. There is a kind of incongruity here. But, hey, you know, let's live with it. And then the final track for me is a track called Loose Lips, and it's by a San Francisco band called Wooden Ships.
Linda Brownlee is an Irish photographer who has been living and working in London for the past 7 years. Her work has featured in numerous publications, such as Vogue, Dazed and Confused, Nylon and The Guardian. Here, Linda describes her photographic style, her current projects, and she offers advice for anyone thinking of following in her footsteps.
I suppose I'd call myself a portrait photographer, but I do fashion as well, and I would do a lot of documentary work. I'm based in London, and I came here 7 years ago, and I studied communications in DCU, and then kind of went on and got into photography after that when I was planning to do a fine art degree, and kind of stumbled into photography, I suppose. I just decided I kind of fancied a new adventure, and I came to London to sort of work out the photography scene over here. And the plan was really just to come for a year, you know. 7 years down the line, I still feel like I'm kind of just touching the tip of the iceberg here, you know. It's just really exciting when you get over here because I suppose I thought there was just so many things to do and see, and I kind of needed to do them all at once. There's a huge Irish scene here. I mean, Hackney is kind of like Dublin now, the whole creative community. I mean, I think there's lots of stylists, photographers, painters, artists. I think there's a whole bunch of people doing and kind of set designers. And loads and loads of graphic designers in Hackney. This is someone who actually nearly got me into photography, was Sally Mann. And she was one of the people that, I, you know, really got me into photography. She takes loads of pictures of her family. So I suppose I'm kind of been inspired by her again. I'm going to talk about two of the projects I've been doing over the last 16 months, just because they're fresh and exciting for me still. So one of them is a project I did about my neighbours here, the Parker family. So I think I'll focus on that quite a lot. And then the book I'm doing at the moment on Achill Island, which is a series of portraits of people around the landscape. So that's something, again, that I'm working on currently and have been doing so for the last 16 months. So I'll probably talk about that a lot. I'll probably show a lot of favourite editorial work too. I think I'm always trying to capture something and make it feel quite real. So although I kind of will go in with a plan to shoot, usually I go in a completely different direction and kind of hope something different will happen than what I have planned in a way. Kind of hope something spontaneous will happen. I don't tend to try and over-control things. I hope something really nice will happen on the shoot. And I suppose that's based on whatever relationship I manage to establish with the person I'm photographing. So much depends on that. You know, so whether you have like 5 minutes or an hour, it's to try and establish something and record that within that time frame. I think assisting is a really good idea. And I think doing a couple of years assisting a couple of different photographers, you got to learn loads of different techniques, but you also learn what you really like and what you really don't like. I think that's important. It also gives you kind of a little way into the industry. But I think while you're assisting, it's so important to be shooting your own projects consistently and doing stuff you obviously feel really passionate about, and to be building up your portfolio while you're assisting so that you can kind of go around and show magazines or whatever line of photography you're taking, to be showing people your portfolio all the way through so that you can, you know, you're constantly getting criticism, but, you know, people get to know you, you're establishing relationships. And it's to kind of keep all those balls going at the same time. But I mean, if you can study, I mean, I never studied photography, so, you know, I might study photography in 10 years' time. If you could study it first, that'd be, you know, that's a good plan too.
My parents are both artists.
Gentleman illustrator Alan Clark talks to Lacool ahead of this Sunday's exhibition in 13 North Great Georgia Street. The loons have looned their last.
So I suppose it's not all that surprising that I ended up becoming an artist, but I studied architecture for 3 years, knowing from day one it wasn't really what I wanted to do, but I did 3 years of it for some reason, and I gave it up then and I went and studied illustration, and that is my niche. That was my cup of tea, if you know what I mean.
Where did you study?
Falmouth in Cornwall over in England. And I'm actually going back there in a couple of weeks to do a master's.
Your stuff itself, like, it's quite unique, I think, your style. It's very gothic, Victorian. It kind of reminds me of, like, these kind of B.T. Barnum circus acts.
Yeah.
So where does that come from itself? Like, was there an inspirations behind that, or is that...
No, well, I'm sure, yeah, there are many inspirations, but to put my finger on individual ones is quite difficult. I mean, all that the sort of graphic language of the circus and stuff like that certainly is an inspiration, and also the literary language of the circus, if you know what I mean, if that makes sense, like the way things were written and phrased, and just the sort of approach to it would also be an influence, coupled with my own sense of humor, I suppose. Like, in terms of the execution of the pictures, I can kind of put my finger on individual events when I identified like a new technique or something like that, or had a breakthrough. I can actually trace it back to going, this is when this started, or this is when this started.
The language is interesting as well, because just even reading the kind of descriptions that your exhibitions have, or even seeing your, I think it was your Sweet Talk that you did.
Yeah.
It's like you have a great command and mastery of that kind of...
I put quite a lot of thought into it, actually, you know, and I get a bit of a... I like getting commissions or doing work where I have a little bit of writing to do as well, because it's I just kind of indulge myself a little bit, like, you know, I never use one word when I can use 10.
Yeah.
And it's an aspect of my work that I'm developing, if you know what I mean. It's going to come more and more into it. I enjoy the two, the images and the words.
But you must be aware of it, kind of like... a good reception that you get here?
I suppose so, yeah. I mean, my work, I think, is very accessible. Like, you know, it appeals to quite broadly to people. Like, I'm quite a perfectionist with it as well. I don't like showing work or even, like, doing commissions or anything like that I'm not 100% happy with myself. And I think even though sometimes it's to my detriment financially, maybe, or in terms of time, if you know what I mean, in the long run, it pays off, because most of the work that's out there, I'm kind of pretty proud of. Like, you know, it stands to me, and I think it is accessible. Like, the humor in it and the way it's executed and stuff is people. There's no real mystery to it. Someone will come up and there might be a picture hanging on one of my pictures hanging on the wall, and they'll kind of go, you know, what's going on here? What's this all about? In a situation like that, I don't know what to say. I'm lost. They're lost, and I'm lost. And it's a lost cause, if you know what I mean. Because if they don't get it by looking at it, no amount of explaining on my part is going to sort of open the window for them, if you know what I mean.
How did they take you in Berlin? Well, first of all, what sparked the move to Berlin?
A change of scenery. Yeah. Simple as that. I was in a studio just up the road here on Thomas Street that was kind of not really working out from a practical point of view. It was a bit cold and it was just not quite right for me. So I was going to be moving studios anyway. And I thought, rather than just move 100 yards up the road, why don't I move 1,000 miles up the road, if you know what I mean? So that was the motivation behind the trip to Berlin.
People say about Berlin, it's such a great city because it's... it's a city where artists can afford to live?
Very much so.
How did you find it yourself being there?
It's very affordable from a practical point of view. There are a lot of artists there. There's a very vibrant art scene. Not that I immersed myself in it all that much. Work-wise, kind of kept myself to myself. I didn't try and break into the Berlin art scene. I was just doing my own thing with the view to bringing it all back here when it was done. The exhibition is just an exhibition of work I've been doing for the last, year, I suppose, really. Since Offset last year. Now, I've been working on a lot of commissioned work in the meantime as well, so it's not a full year's work, but it's just kind of a continuation of work born from my imagination, I suppose,
Was there anything there that you thought you could take back to Dublin, or is there anything that the creative scene in Dublin could take from Berlin?
That's a tricky one. People are very open there. I mean, people are very accepting of things. I'm talking about enterprises in the arts, probably more so than they are here. That's a double-edged sword a little bit, but maybe we could take a page out of that book a little bit.
Celestine Cooney is the fashion director of the biannual Twin magazine, and she contributes to numerous international publications, having come to prominence as a stylist in the mecca of cool that is Dazed and Confused. She has worked with Florence and the Machine, Santa Gold, MIA, and Marina and the Diamonds. And in this conversation with stylist and journalist Angela Scanlon, recorded during London's Fashion Week, Celestine describes how she got her big break and her thoughts on the potential for an Irish Vogue.
I started out doing, I have a degree in film, so I didn't start out or train to do fashion at all. And I think I kind of ended up in it by accident. Trevor White, who was the publisher of the Dubliner magazine, he asked me to start a shoot. Now, before I was doing anything at all, really, I was designing T-shirts. But it was about, 8 or 9 years ago now. But he asked me to start a shoot for him. And we basically took everyone down to my family home, which is in County Meath now. And we photographed the model up in a tree in a big ball gown, and she was on my pony at the time, Secret Lady. We photographed her on the pony, and it was really kind of quite a fun shoot and quite magical and a little bit dreamy. And it ended up being the cover of the Dubliner. That was the first shoot I'd ever done. I think I did another one for them. So I started writing for the Dubliner as well. And then I met Youssef, who was doing Mongrel magazine. And then I ended up being the fashion editor of Mongrel as well, which is funny because I used to shoot with Niall O'Brien for Mongrel and stuff. And he's over here at the moment with me. He's just shot the Queen Me Too campaign. And so it's quite amazing that me and Niall started out together at Mongrel. And now we're both here kind of working for magazines like Dazed. And if I want someone to look at my book, especially in the mecca of cool that Dazed is, everyone wants to be in there. I would have to make an appointment. I would need them to want to see me. And there's pretty much no chance I would get to see Nicola. But whatever way it worked out, I went up and I just left my book at reception. I made no appointment. It wasn't for anyone's attention. I just left it there. I thought that's what you did. I was like, I'm just dropping my book in. And I left. And when I came back the next day to pick it up, and literally there was no agenda for me. I wasn't thinking of moving to London, or it must have been in there somewhere, because I think you do make your own luck a lot of the time. And when I went to pick it up, they were like, Nicola wants to see you. So I went in thinking it was a girl, and I went up to the photo editor at the time, Emma Reeves, and was like, oh, hiya, how's it going? Yeah, are you Nicola? And she's really hardcore. And Emma's amazing, but she was just no. Nicola's a boy. And she was really quite hardcore with me. And I was just whoa, okay. And I walked over to Nicola then and went, hey, here, I thought you were a bird. And because Nicola's a girl's name in Ireland. And but he was funny. I think he just thought I was mad. And we sat down and he just loved the stuff. I don't know what he liked. And he just said to me, he was like, come and work for me. When are you moving to London? By the time I got there, he'd one main assistant who kind of worked with for about a month, not even a month. And then Nicola just said, no, I want you as my main assistant. And the other person was gone and it was just me. And I worked with him for about 2 years. He can seek out the best new kids who will bend over backwards for him. It's a very symbiotic relationship with Nicola and the new people that he finds. It's funny. I think people probably don't realize the amount of work that goes into, you know, the fashion industry. I think it seems kind of frivolous sometimes. And I think unless you're behind the scenes, you don't really get to see the kind of working until 2 a.m. I mean, this goes right through from the designers here. I mean, they're working 24 hours before fashion week, you know, like it's insane. And then, you know, the same with the stylists. And it's really, you can't work in the fashion industry and not be a grafter. You're just not going to get anywhere. To be able to work that hard at something, you have to love us, you know. We don't have enough people in Ireland to have an Irish Vogue. Actually, myself and Alistair McKim both claimed that we would be the editors. It'd be a bit of a battle, I think. English Vogue, you know, British Vogue, I think, does that job. I mean, I'd love to think that we could have an Irish Vogue or something that feeds off kind of the information of British, but more kind of Irish-based. It would be amazing. I mean, maybe we will.
With just days to go to the Offset Festival and the likes of renegade advertising guru George Lois, Wired Magazine's Scott Dadich, Mark Farrell, the Worcester Collective, Zach Gold, David Carson, all descending on Dublin, we talk to the trio behind the festival itself. What follows is a panel discussion between Offset's Richard Seabrook, Bren B and Peter O'Dwyer, with questions from the Cool editor Ciarán, its publisher Michael, and regular contributor and podcast editor Simon Judge.
I'm Bren. I'm an illustrator and I've been working as a freelance illustrator for about 8-10 years now.
My name is Peter O'Dwyer. I'm a creative director and an artist and a photographer.
Yeah, I'm Richard Seabrook, creative director at Dynamo. And I suppose a couple of years ago, I saw sort of a niche in the sort of Dublin scene to create something that was a little bit different and sort of that focused more on the creative side, what was happening over here. So set up Candy, and then through that, just got to meet the guys and started doing events. It started as a sort of digital magazine, then got into events. We did lots of events all over the world. And, you know, after 3 years, I think we all got a bit burnt out and took a year out and then sat down over a pint and said, let's do this. So we started the small print and then that led to Offset. So Candy just came out of it. I was always fascinated by the PDF format and how nobody in terms of publishing was kind of taking this format that was, you know, the minute something was published, it was around the world. And I noticed there was just lots of stuff going on in Dublin that wasn't being sort of, you know, recorded, or nobody was asking questions. So I started this sort of small PDF magazine, did 11 issues over 3 years. After those 3 years, it was going out like 10,000 times a month. Like, downloads were crazy. We started some live events called Sweet Talks. We had a stage at Electric Picnic. I suppose the whole idea was to sort of bring together the community, or to showcase the community alongside internationals. It wasn't just an Irish focused thing. And, you know, the whole idea was, we did a project with Habitat. We did our own events. And I suppose it was to really sort of just bring the creative community together, because designers were on one side, illustrators or another, photographers are over there. When I just see it, you know, we're a creative city over here. We're amazingly vibrant city. And I think that was the whole idea, to bring it together.
How is the Irish scene kind of regarded internationally?
I think it's what's probably more important is to think about how the Irish scene has developed in terms of an international standard. Like, speaking as an illustrator, if you look at the illustration work that's being produced now, there's a standard there that's as high as anything that's happening internationally. I don't know, that's probably got to do with, you know, the advances in technology and finding out what's happening around the world and the internet and everything. But I think what's happened over the last five years is that we've grown not just to mimic what's happening around the world, but just our standard and our own voices have been heard. And I think, you know, it's hard to know what anyone else outside of our bubble thinks of what we're doing here as a creative scene. But I think if you look at the work objectively, there's definitely an improvement. We're on par with anything that really is happening. Like, once the clients are convinced to do it, the work and the practitioners are here to do it. Like, so I think that's the exciting thing, is how not so much what people think internationally, but what we think of ourselves and how we view ourselves against that.
Mm. Now, if you look at the speakers from this year and last year, the Irish speakers, you wouldn't really see that they're specifically, okay, we're picking Irish people, we're picking people on standard. And they all stand up, like Alan Clark stands up to any illustrator that's on this year. Linda Brownlee is a fantastic photographer working in London. So the fact they're Irish is brilliant, but it's by far the most important factor is that the work is good.
I think having an event like ours as well helps focus the creative scene, and it makes people aspire to be better, you know. Being aware of what's going on is one thing, but actually then realizing that the people on this main stage who people might look at as creative heroes, in inverted commas, actually hear their stories and realize how similar their journeys have been to what we all go through. It takes them down off a pedestal that they don't put themselves on, that we might put themselves on. And I think that's what makes it more achievable and makes people's ambitions much more, easier to attain. What we try and do is because myself, Richard and Peter all have, you know, we're all industry creative professionals, designers, illustrators, photographers. So we have our own favorites in those fields and our own expertise in those fields. But we are also aware that we're interested in, like, I'm an illustrator, I'm interested in photography, I'm interested in filmmaking. I don't want to go to a conference just about illustrators. Mm-hmm. I want to go to a conference that's about creativity. You want to go and find those things that you mightn't necessarily think you're interested in until you see it. And that's the fun of doing an event like Offset, where there's such a variety of speakers come from different backgrounds.
You know, we're very much focused on the creativity, on the big ideas, on sort of inspiring people to go out with fire in their bellies, but also that it acts as kind of a social sort of event. You know, people who haven't seen each other since college, like 10 years ago, were going for Quiet Pines last year. You know, there was a real sort of camaraderie. There was a real sort of sense of, fuck, we needed this. Like, I haven't talked to that guy in ages, you know. And I think that everybody walked away from that. We basically facilitated a big sort of, a big get together, and it wasn't all about the creativity, and it wasn't all about the sort of the big names, and it's not like heavy hitters. And, you know, lots of people, as Brian says, you know, you go to see, if you're a practicing designer, you're there for the heavy hitters, but then you also get to see all these other guys, and you just get a different slant on it. In terms of the ambition, I think that it needs to be the size that it is, because last year we did really well and it sold out, and we just feel that we want it to grow, and sort of we want it to reflect how vibrant the city is. And, you know, it can only get better as far as we're concerned. So
I think, you know, you touched on some of the social aspects from last year. That was one of the most surprising aspects, was the fact that it was such an inclusive social thing, that outside of the main lecture hall, there was so much going on. Have you done anything to add on to that this year? Or
yeah, we got a lot of sort of gallery events. We've got club events. We've got shop events. There's 15 events that happen in the sort of lead up and sort of around the weekend. It's when you see the buzz that something like this can generate all at one time, and you see different people in different venues, and then you see crossovers of people. You know, it's all about trying to, all the events are sort of programmed to be original. Like, we've got Alan Clark showing a new body of work. We've got Aidan Kelly showing a new all these portraits in the South William. We've got a group show in South Studios on the Wednesday night. We've got Daniel Etock doing a new show. We've got DJ Shadow doing a live show. It's all part of parcel of what creativity is. And, you know, Dublin is plays the perfect host. And, you know, going back to why even speakers like to come here, people love coming to Ireland. It's not a hard sell.
And how significant is it to have people make the transition from the ancillary events that are happening around town to the actual main festival as well?
Some people are going to do that anyway, because some people may not want to go to the conference itself, but we still want to feel as if the city has been transformed, and we don't want to feel as if people are just locked into a theatre for 3 days and feel as if they're kind of getting a bit of sense of sort of
cabin fever,
yeah. If that's the word.
You know, I think that anything you approach in life, if you apply a creative aspect or a creative thought process to it, you'll solve it in a new way. And I think that what we're trying to do is bring the best original thinkers into one room for 3 days, and then to take them to the second room, and basically so people can interact with them, ask them questions. But, you know, we want people to come away with it just inspired, and knowing that through the application of original thinking, new things can happen, and sort of wealth and sort of prosperity can start to bloom again. Because, you know, for all the shite that the government is talking about, the knowledge economy, and, you know, we're as fucking ripe as our imaginations, and we're all gonna, like, nobody is getting us there. And, you know, events like Offset and all of the other collectives around town, you know, and all the collectives around the country are just, they're the people that are going to take this country by the scruff of the neck and bring it into the next millennia, because there's no way you can rely on the other guys. So,
are you not afraid though you're going to, through Offset, give birth to a new, more skilled generation who's just going to knock you off your perch?
Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, if we inspire people to do other events and to create new things, then that's what we want to do.
Yeah.
You know? We're not about ownership of new ideas and creativity. We're doing what we want to do. We hope there's a room somewhere, you know, or a pub somewhere, there's three girls, three guys, whatever, and they're coming up with their thing because they've been inspired by Offset. That's going to make us feel better.
Yeah, I think that you just have to look at the, you know, the scene is always improved when there's more stuff going on. You know, you look at this, the void that somewhere like Space 54 filled, and then you look at the void that it left, and it's just like, holy shit, you know, something like Le Cool comes out of nowhere and suddenly it's filling a void that people can latch onto. And I think that, you know, for everything that comes, it's only a good thing. And I think the more that happens, the more noise, the more sort of, the more enthusiasm, the more, then that pumps people up and they get excited. And then we get heard on the international scene. So,
Brendan, Peter, Richard, thank you very much.
Thanks a lot, guys.
Thank you.
Cheers.
Bye.
This Le Coolcast has been brought to you by Kieran, Michael, and Simon. Our next edition will feature highlights from the Offset Festival. All support and feedback is welcome. We hope you've enjoyed it.